I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, hour number two on this Monday. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney Show, company from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Hope everybody's well. Apologize. Every time... We're going to do college football here, but every time my damn team is on national TV, I feel compelled to apologize before, you know, what you're going to be subjected to tonight on Monday Night Football. Da, 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 da. Yay. So I would suggest to find the real angle here, either if you have fantasy players going, unless maybe you picked up the Patriots defense, but if you have too many fantasy players going to this game, then your fantasy team sucks like my team, who is now 1-8. I got 43 points yesterday from Kyler Murray, and I still didn't break 100.
Wow.
My team is terrible.
That is horrendous.
It's bad. It's bad. So I got negative points for my defense. So nice. Find a betting angle or find something else to do, because this game tonight is going to be all sorts of slop. But what was not slop, boy, we got the royal treatment over there. We had some great college action. We'll get to Kyle Trask in Florida later on in hour number three and where they are now in terms of the CFB bubble machine here. But Notre Dame, boy, they needed it. Brian Kelly needed this perceptually. The program needed this perceptually. Clemson will be fine, and Clemson, you think, would recover. But the Irish had a night that they really craved and needed, T.
Yeah, it started on the first play, too. Kyron Williams goes to the house on the first play of the game for Notre Dame. It made you feel like, okay, we're in this. Uh-huh. We have a shot to win this game. And again, this wasn't a perfectly played game by Notre Dame. I'm not sitting here saying, you know, Ian Book will look dominant, and if he plays like that, they're going to win a national championship, because he didn't. But this, they did exactly what they needed to do. Kept this thing, you know, first of all, took a lead and then kept it close and ultimately get into overtime. And their defense, which we talked about last week, BT, as being one of the top in college football. I think they were at that point, were only giving up about 9 points a game. Now, clearly they gave up 40 because it went to double overtime. But still, this defense is stout. It's opportunistic. We saw the Travis Etienne fumble, which is like his third fumble
that's
in three games.
It's happening this year,
BT. It's like they're not all his fault, but still, the ball's on the ground when it's supposed to be going to him. That's something that's I don't know, it's just probably troubling, you know, not just for him, but for people evaluating him as well. But we saw what happened. Notre Dame picks it up and they go and they score. And so they're able to take advantage of teams' mistakes. And let's be real. Like the narrative around Notre Dame was, yes, they're this independent that sits out, you know, in the Midwest. They play whoever they want. Their rivalry games aren't rivalry games anymore. Nobody thinks that BC has a shot, even though they play BC next week, interestingly enough. Nobody thinks that, you know, USC, who has been bad in the Pac-12 over the last couple of years, that they have a shot. Like these big-time rivalry games that we glorify from a bygone era, they're not relevant anymore.
You mean like Air Force doesn't do it for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Or Boston,
you know what I mean?
College?
Like, it's not like
Stanford.
They beat USC. They have a shot to be one of the best. No, it doesn't mean anything anymore. This year, it does, though, because they're in the ACC. So every game matters as they try to push towards the ACC championship. That the previous narrative was the same. Because of this weak schedules that they play, they get to the BCS National Championship in 2013 and get rolled by Alabama. Rolled.
Bro, that was a horrendous game.
That was the Manti Te'o. Remember
awful.
That. They get to the college football playoff semifinal against Clemson in 2018.
Smoked.
They didn't score a touchdown, BT.
Crushed.
Right? So crushed. The narrative has always been the same. You sit out here independently, good. You're making a ton of money from NBC because you have this standalone product, blah, 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 blah. You're not good enough to compete with the big boys, especially in important games. This was an important game, and Brian Kelly had them ready, and they came away with a victory that I think changes, my perception of the program, certainly of Brian Kelly for getting his guys ready.
Well, let's hear from Brian, and I say this with a smile because I was listening to this cut earlier today before the show, but it almost seems like Brian Kelly doesn't feel like dealing with all the extra I'm smiling, obviously, but does this sound like a guy who is like overly thrilled that they just snapped the, 36-game win streak and beat whatever it was, and beat the number one team of the country? It seems like he's worried about the mechanics of the job. Here's Brian Kelly post game.
We've got a target on our backs now. So there are so many more things on my plate relative to what I have to do than really concern myself with playoffs and who's in and who's not in. There are other people that will do that because the real challenge now is to keep this football team accelerated.
But the challenge, I understand that, listen, kids are very, very temperamental.
Yep.
And by kids, I mean college kids, clearly 5 and 6-year-old kids. But I mean, even young men and young women in college, it is what it is. They're not fully developed and mature yet. And there are outside influences which, you know, can alter perception positively, negatively, and impact performance. So I get what Coach is saying there. That he's got to be extra buttoned up now. Going into the game was one thing, but now that you beat Clemson, you beat Dabo, now it's a totally different aura that will engulf the program, so to speak, here. But, you know, aside from all those things that aren't quantifiable, let me tell you what is. They blew a 13-point lead. They showed the character and the resilience to charge back and handle business after that.
Yep.
They rallied in the final minute in the first overtime, and they had all sorts of gas in the tank for the second overtime.
Yep.
So I understand that Trevor Lawrence wasn't out there, but is Trevor Lawrence going for almost 500 yards?
No.
And if he is he going for almost 600? There's limits as to what you could do.
Yeah, you're right. DJ Uiagalelei was
great.
Fantastic. 439 and 2 touchdowns and, you know, 2 receivers well over 100 yards. The issue was that Clemson couldn't control. They couldn't shorten the game. You know, usually they're able to do that with their run game. What did they run for 34 yards in total on the day? I don't think we've seen Clemson that inept in their ground game in a really, really long time. So you give Notre Dame credit for stopping what they know was going to really hurt them. If Travis Etienne goes off, then we're gonna have a long afternoon, or long evening, I should say, because it was a night game. Instead, they controlled it. They kept it close. They kept it tight, and ultimately, they wanted at the end. And I found it funny that Brian Kelly prepped his guys about the kids storming the field. Like, as soon as we win this game, the kids are gonna storm the field. So make sure we have our exit off the field. That obviously, you know, came to fruition as all of the 11,000 fans, you know, came onto the field down out in South Bend. Which was, I mean, not smart, but
I'm not going to get on it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's definitely not smart. But
honestly,
here's the thing, Teak. If you're going to let kids in the stadium, then you have to understand there's a possibility of that happening.
That's exactly right. Especially when the number one team is in town.
Yeah,
and look, most of them had their mask on, so it is what it is.
But yeah, not to fully condone it and marginalize it, but I'm certainly not going to get on the air and shred a bunch of 20-year-olds who were doing funnels in the parking lot for running on the field when you beat Clemson, who's number one. It is what it is.
That's right.
The thing, you talk about the aura, and you know, back to Notre Dame for a moment, like the aura and the... In a lot of ways, it's funny because how much time did we spend on Jim Harbaugh last week? And you know, you brought up a very salient point where the expectations, quite frankly, if Jim Harbaugh was being measured by a barometer that was fitting of the accomplishments, past accomplishments of the program that he now coaches, the uproar, granted, the Michigan State loss was hideous. You were 24.5-point favorites, unacceptable.
Yeah.
You lost to Indiana. Things are clearly off the rails. But, I mean, up until that point, there were, you know, they've had one, what did I read this one? They've had one 12-win season in their history.
Yes.
Ohio State's had 8 12-win seasons this decade.
That's right.
To measure Michigan against Ohio State is the wrong measurement, right? But I think that that's somewhat the same at Michigan, at Notre Dame? And what's the one commonality? I'm sure among some others, academic integrity, et cetera. But they just don't have quarterbacks to go to the NFL and do anything.
That's right.
DeShone Kizer was an interesting prospect.
Yep.
Could move, had a big arm.
Should have stayed in school.
And
Brian Kelly told everybody that.
Yes, he told us that.
I know he did.
He told us that on the show. He went to the wrong franchise that was in shambles and disrepair, wasn't properly insulated. He's pretty much, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And before that, you've got to go back to Brady Quinn, who sat in the green room all night back in, I guess that would have been the 2006.
Yeah.
I think it was 06. But you're talking 2006, you're talking 15 years ago. In 15 years, they've had two guys that we've talked about as pros.
Yes, like at the quarterback position.
And if you don't have a quarterback, defensively they're all over the map.
Yeah, of course. But if you don't have a quarterback, if you don't have a quarterback in college football, it's really hard to win, BT.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm trying to think of maybe Alabama with A.J. McCarron.
Yep.
But A.J. McCarron was a pro.
And McElroy.
Yep. But A.J. McCarron was a pro. But McElroy was just because he was small. I mean, he was little. He was before you were a little quarterback could make it in the NFL. There was one prior to Kyler Murray now and Russell Wilson, and that was Doug Flutie.
Yep. Like,
the little quarterbacks just didn't make it in the NFL. Now the game has changed in the NFL, so you can do it. But you're right. You think about it. It's probably A.J. McCarron, who was more prototypical NFL quarterback, and he's still hanging around, by the way.
Making some decent backup money.
As a backup, and he will do it for a long time because he's smart. He's when he gets in the game and has to play, not that he's had to recently, you know you can count on him to do the right thing. So, I mean, Alabama might be the only program that won national championships without having that guy.
I'm trying to think. I'm just forgetting right now. Who was LSU's quarterback when Saban was there?
That's a good question.
Because LSU's had some.
Maybe DeSale can look it up, but I can't even remember.
I mean, our buddy Josh Booty was there, you know, and we've had him on all the time. But and they've had Jamarcus Russell got drafted first overall, was a bomb with the Raiders. But not that they were winning championships, but they had some top 10 incredible, even with Fournette, incredibly viable teams.
Yeah.
That didn't necessarily get that quarterback play. So maybe that's partial answer to your question.
And it's also not like that we're saying you have to be an elite NFL quarterback in order to fit this conversation.
No.
If you're not an NFL quarterback, you better at least been elite in college.
Correct.
At least at Ohio State, the JT Barretts of the world or the Cardale Jones,
yeah.
Right? Those guys were elite college players.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They were in the conversations for all-time greats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tim Tebow was never a great NFL quarterback, but he was in probably one of the best college quarterbacks we've ever seen.
No question about it. Most decorated for sure.
And so if you don't have the former and you don't have the latter, you're not winning.
Period. Yep.
And so Notre Dame doesn't really have that right now, but they have a well-coached, balanced team on both sides of the football. And so you have to start giving them a chance. Like that narrative that was that they can't arise for big games, they blew out of the water with this Clemson victory. And now they just need to take care of business. They have BC next on the docket. And after that, Florida State, I know, North Carolina, BC, then North Carolina, Syracuse, and then Wake Forest. That's how they finish.
Okay.
BC's tough.
Yeah.
BC's very, very tough.
Yes, they are. They got a pro quarterback.
North Carolina can score.
Uh-huh.
So they get through these next couple of weeks, then they're in the conversation for the college football playoff, regardless of what happens in the ACC championship.
The thing that's interesting, too, about that BC game is that the Boston College-Clemson game was so recent that you can extrapolate a lot from footage there. Although Lawrence will be back, you would imagine. Trevor Lawrence will be back.
Yeah, he definitely will be back.
You know, for the Clemson's next game. But
when
Notre Dame plays BC, obviously Trevor wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
You can still look at, what did Clemson do defensively where Boston College kind of had their way. I know there was a long return, whatever. That wasn't on the defense, whatever. But I think that, that game will be a little more interesting than it would have been if Clemson just wiped the floor with BC last week. I don't know, but where are the warning? What are these warning flares? Trevor Lawrence isn't playing strong safety. He's not playing defensive end.
Yeah.
So are we worried about Clemson now? There's some vulnerabilities there. You got to be.
I am. By the way, Jeff Hafley at Boston College is doing a heck of a job. Let's not forget he was at Ohio State a year ago.
Yep.
As their defensive coordinator.
Smart hire.
It's not like they got some guy off the street who nobody knows. BC
and that's not an easy job, Teak.
I agree. Because how do you recruit there?
There's the high school scene's not very good. The academic standard is very high. And they've been down. I'll put quote down really since, well, even after Fluta, they had Hasselbeck, they had Glenn Foley, they had Mark Chamorro. They've had players over the years. But they have Matt Ryan, obviously. Since Matt Ryan, and they got up to number three that year when they played, I think they played Virginia Tech in the rain. I think it was Virginia Tech, and it was a low-scoring game. But really, since Matt Ryan was there, you know, it's a middling ACC, no-juice program. That's a tough job.
Yeah. You know what? No, to your first, back to your original question about Clemson, like the worries about teams putting up points. Mm-hmm. And so BC put up points a lot in the first half. They did nothing in the second half.
Nothing.
So you give them credit. Clemson credit for defensive adjustments, and they have a really good defensive coordinator and Brett Venables, who's got two kids on the team too, by the way, which is kind of cool, and one of them actually plays a lot. But the challenge, I think, with Clemson and the secondary in particular is that they're no longer like the best athletes on the field.
And why not, though? I have no idea.
I can't explain it, BT, but I say that because when you watch the Notre Dame game, the opening play, when Kyren Williams, gets down the sideline, is just gone. He's outrunning. This is the running back now. Yeah. This isn't like some elite wide receiver. This is the running back for Notre Dame is outrunning the secondary, like all of them, of Clemson. And the first thing that jumped in my head is, man, is this kid the best athlete on the field right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I've ever said that about Clemson, because at Clemson we're looking at their D tackles. These guys, they had three of them on one line that got drafted in the first round. You know what I mean? So you always look at Clemson and you're like, these are the best players, athletes in the Southeast or wherever they come from. In South Carolina, North Carolina, maybe Virginia, Texas, whoever they come from, California. These are the best athletes that you can find. But against Notre Dame, it looked like Notre Dame might have had a couple of better athletes than Clemson.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting. You don't say that too much about Notre Dame. I mean, not that they have,
That's right.
Claypool. Look at Claypool every Sunday. It's not like they've got scrubs.
But Claypool wasn't this in college.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't.
Was that on Brian Kelly?
Is
that on the quarterback play?
I think it's probably more on the scheme and the quarterback play.
Okay. All right.
I mean, he's in the perfect place.
He's a freak.
Well, he's also in the perfect place because look at who his quarterback is. It's not like he had Mason Rudolph as his quarterback as his rookie season.
No, but
he has Ben Roethlisberger.
But it's not like it's Russell Wilson or Mahomes. I mean, we revere Big Ben, but Big Ben's not a top five or six quarterback.
But Big Ben can put you in positions to make great plays.
That's true.
That's true. That is what it is. He'll throw you right where you need to catch it.
That's
in fact,
true.
Claypool dropped one at the end of that game.
He did.
It was right where it needed to be. It was a little bit low, maybe. Yeah. But he needs to make that catch.
You definitely got to make that play. He thought he got fouled too, but no, you got to make that play.
That's right. Look at the three touchdown game he had a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's partly Big Ben, man.
All right. I said fair three times. I conceded. Hands are up. I got you. Let me play Dabo real quick because we're going to move on and get to the Chargers meltdown. Raiders look good. Chargers look good until they didn't, which is pretty much usual protocol for L.A. late.
Mm-hmm.
But here is Dabo on what's next for Clemson.
It hurts. It hurts. You put everything you got into something, let it go your way, it hurts. It's a very competitive group. They expected to win, never lost any doubt. I mean, it was disappointing that, again, we have so much to overcome. And we had every opportunity to win it, but we just didn't. Again, you got to give Notre Dame credit. Double overtime game on the road, lots of adversity, lots of mistakes, and you still got a chance to win the game. We were fortunate. But we didn't get it done. But they're all hurting. And so that's the biggest thing is the mistakes caught up with us.
Okay, and now we'll see where the rest of the season takes us. The door is opening a little for Florida, a little. And, based on what's happening with Florida, not to mention Notre Dame, Clemson's still there, Bama, Ohio State, whatever order you want to put them in, it seems like this weekend I feel less confident about the path for Cincinnati and BYU, even based on Friday how I felt.
Yeah. Because of Notre Dame.
But also because of Florida.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Even with the loss, there's no way Cincinnati's getting over Florida if Florida keeps doing this.
Yeah, so we already knew that the SEC might have two, even if the loser of the SEC championship game, whoever that is, they'll probably still have a shot, right? And now you have the ACC, who also might still get two because of Notre Dame's victory over Clemson.
Not to mention the Buckeyes.
That's right. So it puts those group of fives, Cincinnati and BYU, puts him a little bit on the outside.
A little bit there, Teak. All right, coming up, we'll get to the Chargers. They have a lot to like about their quarterback. and a lot to hate about the way they keep finishing these games. It's insane. Yesterday was different. Maybe bad cold did them in, instead of the usual weekly collapse. But we'll get into that. And what do we think of the Raiders, who are on the right end of the win? So we'll get to that coming up. Then Axe Update. We'll do a little more college football in the third hour. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. It's 855-212-4CBS. Whether you rent your home, sure you do. GEICO makes it easy to bundle renters and car insurance. So having a home is hard work. Get a quote. Just go to geico.com. Easy. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. And, of course, simulcast here on CBS Sports Network. We've got Inbounds, Out of Bounds coming up next segment. Some of the things we will hit, the Pac-12, Will Fuller, his status. Is he a number one? Is he a number 1A, number whatever? Where is he ranked amongst receivers? We'll have that. A little something on Justin Fields as well, and something on the decision, how baseball handled Justin Turner's celebration after the World Series. We'll get to that. You know, Teak, this is Masters Week, and we're going to get into the Chargers here in a moment, but I was talking to some CBS people today, and I didn't even realize. I'm usually on top of it, but it was early in the day. And, you know, I said, oh, it's Masters Week. Obviously, it's a huge CBS property, as we all know, and, you know, one of the biggest things that we have, if not the biggest. And, you know, the person I was chatting with, they said, nah, it's going to be messy out there. And I'm like, I didn't even check the weather yet. Mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, wow.
80%, 50%, 50%, 50%. Two of the 4 days are showers. The other 2 days are thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. It's a tropical mess out there in Augusta. So, you know, that, you know, I know everybody wants, how's Tiger going to do? I mean, it's bigger than Tiger. But with that bulky back, if there's a lot of starts and stops, that's not good. And you would think that that kind of situation would favor some of the young guys who can just a little bit more physically resilient, maybe stop for a couple of hours, come back, maybe have to play a fifth or a sixth day if it stretches into that, which it might. So we're all pumped up for Augusta, but the weather is not looking good. Want to at least share that with you. I know everybody's pumped up. All right. You know, yesterday was different. There are collapses, and then there are circumstances that lead to unfortunate last-second defeats. Mm-hmm. And I think yesterday, for the first time in a while, it was the latter rather than the former. It's usually, boy, the choker, the Chargers choked on what? How many points? 16 points, 17 points, 21 points, whatever it was? Yeah, we've seen that a lot. At what point here, Tiki, and you and I are both on the record, we both view Anthony Lynn as an asset for the franchise,
yep,
up until this point and maybe beyond. We're rooting for him. We like him. But when you keep losing, and it's a similar script every week, at what point does the franchise say, we just can't have this anymore?
That
at the
be,
end of the season,
it
I
would
mean,
be
not now.
Irresponsible and wrong to do that now.
Go ahead. At the end of the season, not now. Clearly, not now.
I think even at the end of the season,
go
DT,
ahead.
Because this team plays really good football. Mm-hmm. They are situationally away from winning. And it manifests itself in so many different ways. We've seen a couple of the collapses. In this case, their tight end, Parham, basically it was a touchdown. It was a game-winning touchdown. They should have won, but he bobbled it on replay, and it was ruled incomplete pass, game over. They lose the game. So this wasn't necessarily a collapse. This was more of the play to win the game didn't happen for him. And mm-hmm. we see this with some young teams and young players like Evan Engram, not this past weekend against the Washington football team, but 2 weeks ago against the Eagles, when he, you know, misses a wide open, you know, at his fingertips, he should have made the catch pass, which would have iced the game, and the Giants would be in top the NFC East if he had done that. By
gotta
the way,
gotta hold that play, gotta bring that in.
But it's like it's not necessarily you collapse. Just you have to know you need to make the play. You know what I mean? This is the play.
But it's still a results oriented business. Team.
I 100% 100% agree. But I think the nuance matters. And so if we're gonna give Anthony Lynn, we're going to fault him for, you know, collapsing and losing these games the way that he has, we also have to give him credit for the development and the growth of Justin Herbert, who's a rookie and nobody expected him to be this good, but he's been empowered and put in a position to be their future. And so I think it would do more harm in the long run, mm-hmm. to fire Anthony Lynn after this year because they've lost so many close games. Close games can be flipped. You know what I mean? And especially as you grow as a team and you grow as a unit, you grow as a staff, you can those close games flip. And so all of a sudden, instead of losing them, you're winning them, and it completely changes the narrative on Anthony Lynn.
I see it a little differently. And again, I'm not changing my tune. I like Anthony, and I like to see him, you know, whether it's with the Chargers, they finish strong, and and the conversation ends, if there's even a conversation internally. And I would think that I would think on some level, if it hasn't been discussed seriously, it's got to be in the minds of the decision. It's got to be on some level. Because it happened last year, too. They just blow games.
Yeah.
And when it's one thing to lose 31-10. It's another thing to lose. I know yesterday was different. I'd certainly grant you that. But when you lose in excruciatingly horrific, mind-numbing matters, as they seemingly always do, eventually you just got to change the culture. Change the look, or try to. I can't give you that much credit on Justin Herbert, because he wanted to go back to Tyrod Taylor. Let's not forget that.
Yeah,
he wanted to go back. He did not even know what he had.
But he wanted to. But how would he even known what he had, BT? He didn't. These kids did not practice at all in the offseason. The only thing you saw was him learning the playbook in training camp.
Well, we have to give Justin all the credit, and no credit to anybody on the staff, because apparently they didn't do anything. It was all Justin Herbert.
That's just ignorant to say.
Well, how is it ignorant? Wait, BT,
trust me.
Go ahead.
You don't come into the NFL and just get it.
You don't come into the NFL,
pick up the playbook by yourself without help from anyone, Tyrod Taylor included, and all of a sudden walk into a football game and just get it and have this composure. It just doesn't happen. That's disrespectful to the process.
Well, I think you're taking it too literally.
Disrespectful to the process of what it takes.
But it's not meant to be.
So it's not on Justin Herbert. It's on Anthony Lynn's staff, whoever that may be, the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator, who's putting in positions to feel confident and calm. Calmness comes from itself, but confident and believe that, you know, when he reads something or he sees something, it was taught to him. What we clearly know is that the Los Angeles Chargers have good teachers. Right. It's funny, because I was hearing this conversation today regarding Matt Nagy, how they were saying he's a good coach, he's not a good teacher. And that's why Mitch Trubisky has struggled so much, because he knows like what he wants to do. He has this guru-ness in his mind, but he can't teach it. Right. I think what we're seeing with the Chargers is maybe a lack of game plan, like strength. You know what I mean? Because Anthony Lynn is not aggressive. Like, he doesn't go for fourth and inches. He doesn't go for fourth and ones. He always is going to punt. He's going to do the right thing. He's very conservative.
But that's not always the right thing.
I agree, but that's maddening. But what he can do is teach. And so I think the worst thing that they could do is cut out a leg from Justin Herbert's development by firing his coach after 1 year based on the success or the lack of success during this 1 year.
Even though
it goes back into previous seasons.
Okay, listen. And by the way, I'm not shouting from the mountaintop to fire the man. A matter of fact, I've said twice in this conversation that I believe he's much more of an asset than a detriment, and I'm rooting for a turnaround here. But there's an inescapable, unavoidable point of delineation where you have to say, all right, I mean, you know, imagine a manager in baseball where different pitchers, not just one guy, because you can get rid of one guy, obviously, different arms accounting for multiple maddening bullpen implosions. You'd sit there and you'd say, yeah, I'm sure we could use a few better arms, but it's probably time for change. This guy doesn't manage the bullpen well. Look at how they, you know, and no matter how much we like Anthony Lynn, you can't lose twice a month in this manner, which they do.
But this was everybody.
That's fact.
I just mentioned the tight end Parham. He dropped the game-winning touchdown pass. A couple plays earlier, Mike Williams was wide man-to-man coverage, perfect fade ball by Herbert. He can't corral it.
And almost got a concussion, or might have in the process when he smashed his head.
He probably did.
Great throw.
He probably did.
Great throw.
He still got to make the play.
Great throw is what I'm saying. Great throw.
That's what I mean. So it's always one thing or another. It's never the same thing. And that's what makes it, I don't know. You hate to chalk it up to a bunch of circumstances that, you know, combine to make a narrative, but that's kind of what it feels like. And so I'm not ready to fire Anthony Lynn, because I don't see incompetence. I don't see what I see with the Jets, for
but
instance.
But you see repeated mistakes.
I don't see what I see with but it's not
but the
same
Chargers
person.
Have talent. The Jets don't. Jets are bereft of talent.
But it's not what I see
Chargers
with
Chargers have studs.
It's not what I see with the Bears.
Chicago. Their offense is awful.
It's hard to say that they don't have Allen Robinson's a good player.
Besides him.
Their offensive line is just, it's miserable.
It's awful.
They have an immobile quarterback, and they can't teach the young one that they have. And so it's that feels like incompetence in Chicago. What Anthony Lynn seems like, it's a bunch of players in aggregate who don't know how to make the play when they need to make the play, and it ends up costing them big.
Well,
games.
I hope you're right, because I hope he sticks. As I said, we'll get the update here from Mac. You know, it's really tough to gauge, Teak, because at least with most NFL teams, there's such an obvious outline in the fan base. You can kind of get a sense of what the fans are. I don't even know any Charger fans.
No, you're right.
You don't even. But I would gather,
BT, there might not be any. I'm serious.
Like the real.
I'm joking.
No,
but
I know.
I'm not. I'm
no,
serious.
It's diminished numbers. No, yeah. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. But I think that even if you were able to rally, you know, 50,000 of them, there's going to be obviously 50,000 of the most passionate Chargers supporters for, you know, 10, 12, 15 plus years.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that they've got a lot of faith in Anthony Lynn right now. And I can't say that they'd be completely off base, because when you watch one team that is your team and you lose the same way over and over, tough to get past that, even with the circumstances that you incorporate.
Yeah.
But I hope he rallies, because I like the guy. I do.
So do I.
All right. Let's get the update from Mac. And we've got inbounds, out of bounds right after that. Axe update right now. Here's Rich. Okay. Going to get to inbounds, out of bounds in a moment. First up, time for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. This holiday season, the Home Depot improved Black Friday. Instead of one day, the Home Depot lowered prices now, and they'll stay low throughout December. The best prices of the year already at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. That's good. BYU quarterback Zach Wilson was back at it on Friday night. The Cougars took down Boise State. They pounded him. They hung a 50 spot on him, 51-17. And he finished, Wilson did, 359 yards passing. He went 21 out of 27, two touchdowns. He's got 21 touchdowns on the season to just two interceptions. So Mr. Zach Wilson and BYU obviously doing a lot more. That is brought to you by the Home Depot. All right, Teaky and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Third hour, we'll weave in some of the Florida Georgia conversation, get back to the NFL, to Seattle Bills, some of the real pertinent games. But right now, Teak, it's time for some inbounds and out of bounds. You ready to go? See what you got?
Yep, let's hit it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports, and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. Tiki and Tierney.
All right, so the Texans squeezed one out against the Jaguars yesterday, 27-25. They won by a deuce, and it was the fifth time this season that Will Fuller went for over a C-note receiving. It was also the sixth straight game Fuller's got a touchdown. So he's tied for seventh in the NFL in receiving touchdowns on the season. After the game, Deshaun Watson was asked what it would have been like if the Texans would have traded Fuller at the deadline.
It would have been hell if they would have did that, for sure, honestly. But I'm glad that they continue to play with Will. You know, we've been making a lot of big, big plays since I came in this league together. And I'm going to continue to do that, you know, as we continue to go the rest of this year and hopefully the rest of our career.
Okay, inbounds, out of bounds. Will Fuller is a legit number one receiver.
I'm going to say out of bounds. I think he's really good. He could be 1A, maybe, but he's having a career year this year because the options aren't there right now. The targets have never been. Actually, his rookie year, he had a ton of targets. He targeted him 92 times. However, his catch percentage was really, really low, like 51% low. So as he was a one-trick pony. He was a deep ball guy.
Yep.
And so if he continues to evolve into becoming a better and more consistent route runner, then I would say yes, but I'm not quite there yet. I'm going to say out of bounds.
Yeah, I'm going to say out of bounds as well. I like Will Fuller. He's got most of that 4.33 speed that he took out of Notre Dame with him into the NFL. You know, he's had a lot of, you know, soft tissue, lower extremity issues, which obviously is problematic, which has plagued some of his production.
Dude, he's never played a full season, BT.
Never played a full season. DeAndre Hopkins was getting the boatload of reps or at least action. Although you could also then say, well, then you're going to get single coverage every single time.
Yeah.
Which makes life a lot easier. You know, listen, I'm not saying that there aren't guys who in year five and year six popped and became, you know, that tier one type of receiver, but it's very rare. I mean, usually you kind of know kind of quick. Not that there aren't a few exceptions. I'm not saying that, but You're
right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Who's
what you're
the
saying.
Guy that in year six? Well, he's, you know, you got to pay him $20 million a year. He is one of the top receivers in football after never saying that, even remotely thinking that for the first 5 years of his career. I never thought that. I do like him. I do like him. He's the number one receiver on a bad team.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's the number one receiver in the truest sense of the word. And I think we all know what that means. So out of bounds, but obviously a really good football player.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, so college football welcomed back the Pac-12 this weekend, sort of. Two of the six games were scheduled canceled due to COVID-19 protocols. Now, in two of the four games played, USC came back, beat Arizona State. One thing about the Pac-12, it's usually fun.
Yes.
Not a lot of defense usually, but 28-27, that was a good game. And even Oregon, as expected, took care of Stanford. That score is 35-14. So inbounds, out of bounds. Given that the Pac-12's only two ranked teams, that's number 11 Oregon and number 20 USC, both don't play a ranked opponent in their six-game schedule, this will be a lost season for the Pac-12 as a whole.
I'm going to say out of bounds because I think there's some good things that will come out of this. Out of the season for the Pac-12, even if it's just growth of some young players.
Yep.
But if we're talking relative to the college football playoff, which I believe this is what this, you know, this question is about, then the answer is yes. But I'm going to say out of bounds because I think some good things are going to happen in this short season. At least they're playing football. And that's good not only for the conference monetarily, but for the kids at these schools. So I got to say out of bounds.
Oh, I definitely have to say out of bounds. And when I read the question, I didn't just view it specific to the CFB. I read it more in you know, all encompassing terms. And that extends to the recruiting trail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about, I mean, if you signed a letter of intent, it's far more binding. But, you know, if you just verbal to a school and you're sitting there on Saturdays watching and you verbal to a Pac-12 school and there's not a single snap all season, you know, that might lure you. Somebody might lure you away.
Yep. It's a good thing, too. Think about Clay Helton at USC. Like, if he doesn't put on a good showing, I mean, this is an opportunity for him to change the narrative a little bit about
himself. Yeah,
so.
Definitely a little bit. I think anytime you do something rather than not do it, provided if it, as long as it's not something that's detrimental for yourself or for others, then I think it's a good thing. You could always piece something. You make money. You get some action. The Pac-12 had to fulfill a lot of TV requirements. And they're, you know, I don't know if they're going to get them all, but they're going to certainly make some money rather than losing everything. So, yeah, I mean, you had to get something on the board. And I don't love that they made those other teams sit down. And we talked about this on Friday, a little bit overly or over, maybe a bit of an overreaction.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and this is a good thing that they are that they're playing football. And you could always extract a few good stories from a decent season.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, the Buckeyes beat up on Rutgers. Although they didn't really beat up on Rutgers. Was like, I don't know. Were they actually like 49-point dogs or 30, maybe 39? 49 seems ludicrous. I think they were 39.
It was
maybe
a big,
49.
Big number.
But it definitely
covered,
was huge.
They covered it easily.
No, Rutgers covered it.
That's what I mean.
I know.
That's what I mean.
Know. So while they beat up on Rutgers, they didn't beat up on them as much as we thought that they might. Of course, talking about the Ohio State Buckeyes. Now, in the process, quarterback Justin Fields. Oh, man. I keep hinting this. I'm not going to say it yet. Of course, the Jets will take Trevor Lawrence. I want to go through the process with Justin Fields as well. That I will say. Five touchdowns for Fields and also threw for 314 yards. So in three games, he's now thrown for over 900 yards, 11 touchdowns, no picks. Matter of fact, he's got like more. His incompletions are comparable to the touchdown passes he's thrown. What he's doing is ridiculous. Now, how you judge that, how you gauge that, how you extrapolate that to the next level, that's on you. But right now, he is ridiculous. So.
Yeah.
In or out, Justin Fields is currently the best quarterback in college football.
I can't say that, BT. He's played three games against Nebraska, Penn State, and Rutgers. Let me see him against Maryland, who actually plays, you know, pretty decent football.
Yeah, coming off a nice win.
Yeah, another nice win. Taulia, Tagovailoa, had another good day. Just two games in a row for the Tagovailoas.
Yeah.
Both of them, actually, two wins. So, on the pro and in the college level. I can't say inbounds simply because they haven't played anyone yet. Mac Jones, to me, and I've seen him play in person, he's so impressive, and he played really well against a stout Georgia defense. It was tough going early. I think I told you this, BT. He started the game 4 of 10. He was completing 40% of his passes. From that point on, when he was 4 and 10, he completed 92% of his remaining passes and threw for 415 yards and four touchdowns. So Let me see Ohio State against a stout rival. Not even like a, you know, like a top 10 defense, but just a decent one. Before I make the decision.
Okay, but we saw Justin Fields last year, and he had 41 touchdowns and 3 picks. And
true.
He's only added refinement to his game. I mean, he has tightened some things up. And I know you and I were talking about this a lot because I obviously throw the Trevor Lawrence field stuff by you on and off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that you pointed up and pointed to, this was about 2 weeks ago, I think after his first game, was you want to see a little bit more in the progression development. Understood.
Right.
Although you start to see it, and people are starting, scouts are beginning to write and notice and quantify that the progression stuff is becoming more and more apparent, that he's actually gotten better. It's not just the numbers, which can be misleading. Is he the best quarterback in college football right now? He's the best quarterback in college football right now. Now, if he didn't play last year and we were just judging it off of 3 games against 3 relatively bad, non-threatening teams, I'd probably tap the brakes a bit. 40-plus touchdowns, 3 picks a year ago. This man deserves the energy and the love he's getting. Justin Fields is a superstar, no doubt.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
You know, I don't know if he'd be up for it. I don't know if they'd be up for it. And I know that, you know, Ryan Day was coaching him last year. But if you're the Jaguars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you make a play? We always try to come up with, you know, would Dabo go with Lawrence? I don't think Dabo's a good fit
unique
for New York
plays,
myself.
Yeah.
Would you even contemplate, if you're the Jaguars, and of course they're going to move on from Doug Marrone, go with Urban Meyer and then draft Justin Fields number 2?
The challenge is Urban Meyer is not that QB developer. It's always been a staff. So I doubt it. I don't know if I trust.
What about Ryan Day?
Urban Meyer, because of his health. I mean, he's honest, because of his health. Not that I don't think he's a good, you know, be a good coach in the NFL.
What about Ryan Day?
Ryan Day would be interesting.
Why not?
Because he's had great success as a coordinator. Then he had great success as a head coach last year, and then great success again
with
as a head
coach. A
lot
of pressure coming. I mean, that's incredible pressure.
But you're coming in for
Urban Meyer.
True. I know. You're right. That's what exactly. But think about the jump that he would have now made. Being, you know, who the heck is this taking over interim for, you know, Urban Meyer?
Uh-huh.
Like, because that's what, remember that conversation?
Absolutely.
Like, who the heck is this taking over for Urban Meyer when he had to sit out? And now he's going to be an NFL head coach 3 years later. That's a big jump, man.
It doesn't hurt that Matt Rhule's doing. I know that they've lost, but Matt Rhule's doing a good job. Now, Matt Rhule's got a year in the NFL on his resume.
True.
Matt Rhule's got multiple schools. Matt Rhule's been a head coach longer, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it is a cyclical, listen, in terms of style, the leagues are usually cyclical. And in terms of hiring, the league is usually cyclical.
That's right.
And when somebody before you that you might be looking at now, that type does well, or shows real growth and progress, like Rhule, you might be emboldened to go try and do it again.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And by the way, Cliff Kingsbury, if they had won last night, he'd
be
in conversation for Coach of the Year.
He's doing a good job. Man to coach.
You.
All right. The NFC, speaking of Cliff, the NFC playoff picture is crowded. Will uncrowded. That's next.
You're enough.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.